Welcome to the second AAT podcast in the Employment Taxes series, covering the 2011-12 P11Ds. In this podcast, I will discuss the requirements for submitting the 2011-12 P11Ds, having already in the first podcast looked at preparing the way. I want to begin by looking at why we need to submit forms P11D, P9D and P11DB, including what to do if P11Ds are not required. I should first remind you about when we need to do this important task, and also I want to look at the P11D quality standard that HMRC imposes upon us, and which is quite important if we're going to avoid rejection of any P11D returns that we submit. I will also look in this podcast at our options for submitting the P11Ds. And then in the final of the P11D series, I'm going to look at calculating the value of the benefits to be returned. The statutory deadline for submission of the 2011-12 forms P9D, P11D and the P11DB return is the 6th of July 2012. And as I said in the first podcast, the deadline for payment of the Class 1A NICs, which will be calculated by totalling the brown boxes on the P11Ds, is the 19th of July 2012. That is extended normally to the 22nd of July, but as that is a Sunday this year, we will have to make payment by the 20th of July, a Friday, unless we use the faster payment service, which would need to be checked out with the bank first. There are potentially costly penalties that will be charged if we are late in submitting these statutory returns, and more so if we get them wrong. And then also we'll get charged interest if we fail to pay on time. So let's have a look at why forms P11D and P9D are required in the first place. Section 2. Why are forms P11D and P9D required? Income tax is chargeable against any employment remuneration, which is known as emoluments, of an office or an employment. An employment income includes all salaries, fees, wages, and importantly, perquisites and profits whatsoever, which are received by reason of the office or employment. Salaries, wages, fees, commissions, bonuses, etc., are taxed through the payroll, through pay as you earn. And those earnings are returned to HMRC on the end of year annual return forms P35, P14, and where relevant, the P38A employer supplemental return. But what about perquisites and profits? A perquisite or perk is a benefit in kind received by reason of the employment. In other words, the only reason an employer receives the benefit is because they are working for a certain employer. A profit might arise from the payment of expenses. This could happen when an employee is paid for something that was not a business expense, or perhaps the employee was paid more than the cost actually incurred. In principle, all expense payments are treated as part of an employee's employment income or taxable remuneration, until such time as the payments are shown to have been incurred for business reasons only. Expenses and benefits are returned on forms P11D and P9D at the end of the tax year. Any taxable expenses and benefits are normally taxed by the adjustment of the employee's tax codes for an existing or the following tax year, and I'm sure you'll all be aware of that. At times, the values of taxable benefits will exceed an employee's personal tax-free allowance, which will lead to a K code being used. Often, non-reported benefits and expenses are discovered on a pay-as-you-earn employer compliance review by HMRC officers, and this can prove to be expensive. By us submitting the form P11Ds, we won't have that problem. Section 3. Which employees require P11Ds? The pay-as-you-earn regulations demand that forms P11D are submitted for specific groups of people, and these include the following. Firstly, directors and certain other persons in controlling positions, regardless of their remuneration level. We are talking here about Companies Act directors, not someone with a nominal title of director. And we are allowed to exclude full-time working directors and directors of charities and non-profit-making concerns. However, the second group and the major group are employees. So we're talking about employees and any excluded directors who were or are paid at a rate of at least £8,500 per annum. Of course, that £8,500 limit has been there for many years and is very much out of date. It includes all expenses, payments and benefits, as well as salary, wages, etc., before deducting allowable expenses. And after deducting any approved company pension contributions, deducted from gross salary, and any give-as-you-earn donations. Remember, and I mentioned this in the preparation podcast, it is an annual limit at a rate of, and it may have to be prorated for any joiners or leavers. We cannot simply look at the payroll summary at the year end and decide that anyone below £8,500 doesn't need a P9D. I gave a simple example in the preparation podcast of someone joining on the 1st of March, earning £2,500 salary, which of course prorated for 12 months is £30,000 a year, and a P11D would be needed if that individual had any expenses or benefits to report. Any employee earning less than at a rate of £8,500 in a tax year may need a P9D form to be completed, although that's quite rare nowadays. There is no requirement to report any expenses that were solely and necessarily incurred in the performance of the duties. And that, of course, is quite different to the P11D reporting requirement for expenses which are wholly, exclusively and necessarily incurred in the performance of the duties. Also, for P9D purposes, the employer can decide. Again, for P9D purposes, any other expenses do not have to be reported unless they exceed £25. If, however, the employer paid an employee's personal national insurance contribution or telephone bill, that would have to be reported on the P90 at box 15, as would any gifts in kind and anything bought for or paid to the employee. Section B of the P90 covers vouchers and credit cards, including the excess of any childcare vouchers over the £55 per week or £243 per month tax-free exemption limit. It would include travel and transport vouchers, gifts, meal and any other vouchers which are not exchangeable for cash. Of course, pay-as-you-earn should have applied to any cash vouchers. Section C of the P90 covers accommodation benefit. We have to report the address, the rateable value or any rent and insurance paid, and the cash equivalent of the accommodation provided. The amounts to be entered are included in box 14. Next section, P11D quality standard. HMRC some years ago introduced the P11D quality standard. And for those of you using the e-learning P11D exercise, it's quite important that you remember that all the boxes have to be filled in where we have entries. Whereas if there's no entries at all, you don't have to enter nil. But let's look at the P11D quality standard set by HMRC. As I say, HMRC has introduced a quality standard, the idea being to reduce the amount of rejections and the delays in processing the forms P11D. The quality standard sets out the following requirements that every form P11D must meet. You must include your employer reference. You must include your employee's name and national insurance number. If you don't know the employee's national insurance number, you must provide their date of birth and say what their gender is, male or female. If you are reporting a company car provided to an employee, you must include its list price, because we'll look at that more closely when we look at the section F and calculating the cash equivalent. If you complete box 10 in section F, which is the total cash equivalent of car fuel provided, then you must also complete box 9, the total cash equivalent of cars provided. What that means is that you can't put a figure in for a company car fuel scale charge if there isn't a company car benefit. Quite some years ago, that would be done from time to time, but it's not allowed now. If the employer has provided a beneficial loan to an employee and is reporting it in Section H, then the employer must also complete Box 15 for the cash equivalent of loans. But again, as we'll see when we look at Section H more closely, we don't need to complete anything at all if the total value of all loans in the year was less than the £5,000 limit. If you submit your PLMD information in list or schedule format instead of using the standard forms, then we've got a separate quality standard, and I know from personal experience with my clients, HMRC are tightening up on this. HMRC says we must present the list in an easy-to-read format using a font size no smaller than 11-point Arial. We must organise the list by employee, not by the type of benefit. Again, we've got to include the employer reference number. We must include the employee's name and national insurance number. And again, if we don't know the national insurance number, we have to provide details of the date of birth and gender. We are required to include the full range of expenses and benefits contained on the form P11D in the list, not just the ones that we're providing to the employee. The list must also show the code letters assigned to each benefit on form P11D. And we're told that these are the letters in the dark blue boxes at the left of each section of the form. So it might be number 15. Other errors to watch for in the quality standard include the following. Using a paper form that relates to the wrong tax year. We're told to check the top right-hand corner of the first page, but obviously you also don't cross out 2010-11 and change it to 2011-12 because these forms are scanned. Another error would be not ticking the director box if the employee is a director. But as I've said previously, we're talking about Companies Act directors, not someone with a nominal title of director. Not including descriptions if amounts are included in sections A, B, L, M, or N of the form. You'll find when you're doing the e-learning that you won't be able to complete the exercise unless you include descriptions. Another error is leaving the cash equivalent box empty if we've entered a figure in the corresponding cost box of a section. Sending P11Ds when we've ticked the box in part 5 of the form P35 in the employer annual return to indicate the P11Ds are not due. That may be seen as an error, but of course, if we thought the PLMDs were not due, and then subsequently we find they are, we would have to send PLMDs. Where a benefit has been provided for mixed business and private use, it's an error if we enter only the value of the private use portion. We're told we've got to report the full value of the benefit on the PLMD. So that's HMRC's list of errors to avoid. The next section is reporting expenses and benefits that have been payrolled. HMRC first announced proposals to introduce payroll of benefits in October 2007, but the idea appeared to have been dropped until it was raised again with real-time information. I'm sure, however, that many of you will know that real-time information doesn't include any proposals for payroll in P11D benefits in kind. However, what HMRC has done is to issue guidance on reporting requirements where any expenses or benefits have been payrolled, and some employers do this. We're told that we still have to send HMRC forms P11D or equivalent lists, even if we've entered into an arrangement to payroll benefits in kind and expenses. We're warned that we may make ourselves liable to penalties if we fail to do so. And then the following guidance has been given to us. First option is where we've payrolled all the expenses and benefits paid to employees and we file P11D information online or by other electronic means. We're told that we must telephone the employer helpline at least a week in advance of any online or other electronic submission of the P11Ds, advising them that payrolling has taken place in that year in order to avoid incorrect processing of the data. we have to complete the amount made good or from which tax deducted boxes on the P11D, if there is one provided. And we have to complete the P11DB return as normal, ensuring that the total expenses and benefits provided are included, even though they've been payrolled. Next, we're given guidance where we've payrolled some expenses and benefits for some or all of the employees, and we've filed the P11D information online. Here we're told we must complete the amount made good or from which tax-deducted boxes, if there's one, on the form. We have to submit the P11D information either online, electronically, or on paper for non-payroll benefits. We have to submit P11D information either online, electronically, or on paper for payroll benefits where the benefits that have been payrolled have a corresponding entry for amount made good or from which tax is deducted. We have to submit separately on paper P11D information for other payroll benefits. And these separate P11Ds and lists must be clearly marked payrolled. We have to complete the P11DB as normal, ensuring that the total expenses and benefits provided are included, irrespective of the fact that we've payrolled benefits. Next, we have guidance on where we've payrolled expenses and benefits for some or all of the employees, and we submit paper 11Ds. And we submit paper P11Ds. Here we're told that we must clearly mark all relevant paper submissions payrolled, whether they be individual P11Ds or in a list format. And we must complete the P11DB as normal, again ensuring that total expenses and benefits are included, irrespective of payrolling. To be honest, this suggests that the administration involved doesn't make it worth payrolling benefits, and I do appreciate that not a lot of you or your employees will have done that. Section 6. Provisions made by a third party. It should be noted that any benefit provided to an employee, or indeed his family or household, when provided by reason of the employment, even if provided by someone other than the employer, is still to be taxed as though the benefit had been supplied by the employer. Where an employer has arranged or facilitated with a third party to provide a benefit or to pay expenses, the onus is on the employer to return the costs on the forms P11D or P9D. The third party could be anyone other than the employer and might include an associate company or an organisation. By arrangement is meant that the employer has played an active part in procuring or arranging the provision. We could have a situation of someone working for a UK employer from a subsidiary or parent company overseas, and if that subsidiary or parent company is meeting some of the expenses, they're still reportable in relation to that employee. In some cases, HMRC would accept that the employer will have no knowledge and maybe has nothing to do with the provision made by the third party. In such a case, the employer would be under no obligation to return the provision on forms P11D or P9D. However, the third party would then have to inform the employee at the time, or by the latest 6th of July following the end of the tax year, so for 6th of July 2012 for 2011-12, how much the benefit that they provided to them is worth. The third party would not be under an obligation to inform HMRC about the benefits they provided to another organisation's employees unless specifically asked to do so, but there are some provisions in the Taxes Management Act for HMRC to require returns to be made. It's worth noting that Section 324 of ITPA 2003 exempts from income tax gifts from third parties, providing the gift consists of goods or vouchers that can only be exchanged for goods. Gift is not in recognition of services or anticipation of services. The gift has not been procured by the employer, and the total of the gifts does not exceed £250, including VAT, in the tax year. So, a third-party gift by a supplier of, say, a £250 Harrods voucher wouldn't be taxable if it was a Christmas gift. Section 7. Deciding whether it's Class 1 or Class 1A National Insurance Liability. I previously referred in the podcast on preparing the P11Ds to the brown and blue boxes. This was mainly because of the 19th or 22nd of April 2012 deadline for paying Class 1. Now, at this point, I want to have another look at this and in more detail to ensure that when we submit the P11Ds, we complete the correct entries. In other words, we know when it goes on a brown or a blue box. Hopefully, you have a colour copy of the P11D in front of you to guide you on this. But we can clearly see where there's a brown box because you've got the Class 1A box as well. And then the other boxes, the blue boxes, there is no box for blue box or Class 1. The brown boxes are added up to determine the total amount of the employer's Class 1A NIC liability for 2011-12. But as I've said, the blue boxes may indicate that there's no Class 1 or Class 1A liability. Certainly there wouldn't be a Class 1A liability, but there could be a Class 1 NIC liability on the provision of something like a voucher which attracts Class 1. On the front of the P11D, we have highlighted in brown and below the works number department box that employers pay Class 1A national insurance contributions on most benefits. It says these are shown in boxes which are brown and have a Class 1A indicator. Section B for payments made on behalf of the employee. Section C, vouchers or credit cards. Section E, mileage allowance and passenger payments. Section M, where we have a choice of blue or brown boxes. And finally, Section N for expenses payments are the ones where there's a blue box and a potential Class 1 liability. Section M is the only dual choice section on the P11D. We have the option of choosing a brown box for Class 1A, usually where there's a contract between the employer and the supplier. The most obvious example of a Class 1 national insurance contribution liability, apart from vouchers, is where the employer pays school fees on behalf of the employee. If the contract is with the employee, it's a Class 1 liability. If there was a contract between the independent school and the employer, then it could be a Class 1A liability. This point is specifically covered on question 5 of the P35. There it asks, have you paid any of an employee's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? As I've said, only if there's a contract between the employer and the supplier would it be a brown box and Class 1A. An error that's often made by employers is to assume that the reporting of the payment on the P11D, where a specific box is provided, is all that they need to do. Employers and us as advisors need to be aware that a blue box entry may mean that there's a Class 1 liability. And of course, that should have been dealt with through the payroll before we're doing these P11Ds. Another example of a blue box entry that might be dealt with incorrectly is private medical insurance, if the contract is not with the employer, but with the employer director personally. Where this occurs, it shouldn't go on the P11D in Section I, but should go in Section B as the payment of a personal liability. I think really, by the time you come to do P11Ds, the Class 1 problem is something we can't deal with because the payroll's already been closed down. But what is quite important is that you identify the correct boxes to put the entries into. And on that basis, I would say, look at the CWG5, Appendix 1 Common Benefits, because that gives us guidance as to when it's a Class 1 or a Class 1A liability. And even in the end column, it tells us where to put it on a P11D. I hope you'll find that useful, particularly when you come to do the e-learning exercise on the AAT website. Next section, Section 8, calculating the P11D benefit and when to make good. The general rule for calculating the value of a P11D expense payment or benefit is that the cash equivalent or the value of the expense payment or benefit is the cost to the employer or indeed to a third-party provider. There are some exceptions to that general rule where we have special legislation. And this will include living accommodation, vouchers, car and fuel benefit charges in company vans. In terms of calculating what to report on the P11D, we also need to remember that everything has to be reported on a tax year end basis, not the company or employer's accounting period basis. So as an example, an employer with an accounting period of, say, the 31st of December would have to apportion the expense payments to be reported between the accounting period to 31st of December 2011, where effectively we would have 9 months from April to December to report, and then the accounting period from 1st of January 2012 to 31st of December 2012, where we would apportion the costs for the first 3 months, January to March 2012. I've mentioned previously, and this is very important, that all P11D expenses, payments and benefits to reported must be reported on a VAT inclusive basis. In other words, including VAT at 20%, if relevant, irrespective of whether the employer can recover part or all of the VAT cost. We are required to include details of any amount made good by the director or employee or from which income tax was deducted under PAYE. And there are specific boxes for this in most sections, but not all. The taxable benefit to be included on the P11D return should then be restricted to the net cash equivalent, which is the gross figure, less the amount paid or made good, and we report the net figure in the appropriate box. And again, with the e-learning exercise, you will need to fill in all those boxes where there is something to report. HMRC's P11D quality standard demands that we include all three entries on the P11D, not just filling in the net figure in one of the boxes. We also need to make a corresponding adjustment to the total benefits reported on the form P11D if we enter an amount from which tax has been deducted under pay-as-you-earn, if the benefit is liable to Class 1A NICs. Now, the next question I want to look at is this issue of making good. Making good, in terms of the timescale, should be over a reasonably short period. HMRC have taken this point to the courts in the past, and AAT members will have heard me talk about the impact filing case, where an employer sought to recover the cost of fuel enjoyed by directors a long time after they'd actually received the benefit. HMRC refused to make an adjustment and were successful in the courts. So we have HMRC guidance on making good, and particularly for car fuel, in the Employment Income Manual it says, and I quote, "In many instances, the making good required by Employment Income Manual 25650 is completed by the end of the tax year. But you will find cases where making good does not occur until after the end of the tax year. This may be where mileage records and repayments in the final months of the year take a little time to process. You can accept this as meeting the terms of the legislation, provided final settlement is made without unreasonable delay." I think the important point for us to remember is that if we have a situation where someone, say, had a company credit card or fuel card, and the intention has not been to provide them with free fuel, mileage records need to be checked, and employees or directors need to make good the full cost of any private fuel before the P11Ds are submitted, and there needs to be evidence of the mileage records and of the reimbursement. Next section, what about submitting the actual forms? We have a choice. Having completed our preparation and analysed all the relevant costs involved, and having excluded any items that do not have to be reported, we will then calculate the value of the expense payments and benefits to be included on the P11D. And the next step will be the submission of the actual forms, as well as the payment of any Class 1A National Insurance Contribution liability. As previously indicated, the deadline for submission of the 2011-12 forms P9D, P11D and the P11DB return is the 6th of July 2012, and the payment deadline is the 19th of July 2012, extended to Friday the 20th of July for an acceptable electronic payment method or 22nd of July, which is a Sunday, if paying by the faster payment service. The final question, and one that I would want to address before we finish the P11Ds, is how are we going to actually submit the forms? There is no statutory requirement to submit forms P9D, P11D, or P11DB returns online. It is optional, but we can still submit paper forms. I would always choose to submit online, and I can do this quite easily using the software that I've been using for many years. A distinct advantage of P11D software is that you're more likely to avoid errors or problems with the P11D quality standard because the software will ensure you don't do that. Of course, I've learned from experience that we've got to ensure that we have the right version of the software when we come to use that method. If you've only a small number of P11Ds to submit and therefore you're going to choose to do it by paper returns, please bear in mind the requirements of the P11D quality standard and avoid things like using Continental 7s. Make sure you fill in all the relevant boxes, including the description boxes. And I've always advised AAT members to get someone else to proofread the P11Ds or the P11D schedules that you're using. On the P11D schedules, as I've said already, HMRC are insisting on a minimum of Arial font 11, which can be difficult to fit everything in. And certainly I've experienced that with my own clients. If I refer you to some of the HMRC website guidance on submission, it tells us that we can use electronic methods to complete and file our expenses and benefit forms, and that it has a number of benefits, that being that it's quick and convenient, that many calculations are completed automatically for us, for example, working out the report of value of a company car, that it reduces errors, and that we'll be alerted to any problems in the forms before we save or file them, which is certainly what I find with the software that I use. There are three electronic options for completing and filing the 2011-12 forms P90, P11D and P11DB. We can use commercial payroll software, which I do, and that will enable us to complete the expenses and benefit forms on the computer and then file them to HMRC. We can use the HMRC free online return and forms pay-as-you-earn service, which we can access on the website. It allows us to complete and then file the forms online. Some of you may choose to use HMRC's basic pay-as-you-earn tools using the fill-in forms on-screen facility within the basic PAYE tools package, but this only allows us to complete the forms on the computer and print them off to submit. It doesn't provide for us to file them online. If we are going to file online using either commercial software or the online return and forms pay-as-you-earn service, we have to register with the pay-as-you-earn online service, and this needs to be done at least a week in advance. I'm sure that for all of you, or at least most of you anyway, you will have already registered for the pay-as-you-earn service. Certainly that is the case for me. Well, thanks for listening to this. I hope that you found this section useful, and we have, as a final section, the calculating the benefits, which you can perhaps listen to at another time. Thanks very much.